Decadal oscillation is one of my favorite terms that I've learned over the years of reporting for Market to Market. Hello, I'm Paul Yeager. This is the MTOM podcast, a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. Thank you so very much for listening. Decadal oscillation is a term I'm really struggling to spell, and I really can't even describe it, but it's just something about the way Elwin Taylor described it to me in his office in Ames, Iowa, a few years ago. Elwin Taylor is now the Iowa State University Extension climatologist emeritus. He has since retired, did that in 2019. But here in 2020, he is looking ahead at weather for the coming year. Just forgive him. It's a force of habit after you've done it for decades in the state of Iowa. We're going to talk about his roots in Utah and how he picked Iowa as the place he wanted to work. He wanted to be in the middle of farm country, and he has definitely given us all something to think about as we look forward and look back. He deals with numbers. He deals with data. He deals with observation points across the state. How did they come apart, or how did they come about, I should say? And what do they mean? We'll find out about his career in climatology, weather, meteorology. And something he didn't talk about but told me after he recorded is one of his graduate student hires was Wendy Winterstein. Now, before you Google her and you're not an Iowa State person, she is now the president of Iowa State University. So Elwin says he hired her first at Iowa State before anybody else did. So our conversation with Elwin Taylor is a good one when it comes to weather and understanding meteorology. We do get into climate change just a little bit, and it all depends on your source and who's asking the question. So enjoy this discussion. Give us our feedback, markettomarket@iowapbs.org. Hit me up on Twitter. I'm Paul Yeager, Y-E-A-G-E-R on Twitter, or paul.yeager@iowapbs. Would love to hear from you. But now, Elwin Taylor. Did you always think weather was going to be your future in climate?
No, I didn't decide till I was 12 years old.
You waited a long time.
And then I didn't look to the left or right. I just kept looking up.
What was it? What was a 12-year-old Elwin Taylor doing to know that what's up there was the thing you wanted to follow?
Well, I was interested in it, and I had a job with the climatologist checking his weather station every day on the university campus and turning in the official report. So I had a job as a climatologist assistant and kind of a 12-year-old one. Nevertheless, it was enough to get me hooked on the whole idea.
Where was this at?
Northern Utah.
Northern Utah.
On the campus of Utah State University, by the way.
And what city?
That would be the city of Logan, Utah.
Logan, right? So in Logan, Utah, more snow, more heat, more cold. What's the weather like?
All those things.
And that can be in the same day, right?
No, it's a little more consistent than that. The heat's in the summer, at least, and the cold's in the winter. But it's not uncommon to have 20 below temperatures because it's a lot of still air there and clear nights because you're a little higher elevation. The summers aren't usually hot, but then again, 100-degree days aren't especially miserable because the humidity's lower.
We'll get into the humidity of the Midwest in a moment. How did you get from Utah to the Midwest?
As quickly as I could. I finished college, undergraduate at Utah State University. I did my graduate work in St. Louis at Washington University, and by that time I had it made up, my mind made up, I'm going to work in the Midwest. That's where farming is.
So the farming side was attractive to you. Why?
Mostly because I like farmers. And I did all of my work, however, research work with things, well, a little bit of farmers, farmers raising bananas in Panama, but mostly I was interested in how the Panama weather affected all of the vegetation, from jungle-like things in the forests of Panama to more tame things such as banana plantations. But I really didn't want to work in the mosquitoes all my life. I wanted to work in the Midwest with the farms.
Well, the cornfields are almost as humid as those jungles, aren't they?
Well, maybe a little bit more.
Oh, more. So the Midwest, I mean, you target the Midwest. Did it live up to expectations for you when you arrived?
It wasn't really expectations, since I was here to graduate school. I knew what I liked, and that was the people.
Yeah.
And the kind of vocation that they have.
What year was that?
I'm not going to talk about that. That was in the late 60s.
Late 60s. So what has changed about our climate since the 60s to now?
What people have been observing that we're headed maybe toward a greater variability of climate. And, of course, we should be, because we know that if we talk about conditions that are like unto the Dust Bowl years, that happens about every 89 years. The Dust Bowl-like conditions of the 1800s, 1847 was the peak, 1936. That would be 2025 if we keep the 89-year sequence going. And it appears when we study tree rings, they're the keepers, biology keepers, of the weather trends. It seems like that 89-year cycle is a fairly consistent thing over the past 400 or 500 years at least.
So we're now less than 5 years from that 2025. What do we need to know or do in those 5 years?
We need to know that it's not time to drop agricultural insurance, because the variability reaches its peak, the 89-year period, but 3 years on either side. Remember, nature doesn't read our books. We try to write our books to explain what nature's doing.
I'd like to see nature try to read our books. That would be good, Elwin. That would be something. So 3 years on either side. I believe you've talked about, to me in the past, about periods of consistency and inconsistent weather. What does that mean?
Well, we do have periods of time when we get greater volatility. That's not just difference from summer to winter, but we have to do look back at history. And, of course, the harshest, hottest year was 1936, the peak of the Dust Bowl. But also that was immediately preceding. That was the coldest, harshest winter. And when we look back another century before, and that's about as far as we can look with direct records, that's the way it is. It gets more extreme both directions, hot and dry, cold and wet, and right adjacent to each other, just greater volatility. And that's the picture that we're in now for the next 4, 5, 8 years maybe. And this is the time when people ask me, I say, it isn't the time to decide you don't really need crop insurance.
Right. And so if you're saying we're 5 to 8 years to go, or 5 to 8 years we're into this cycle?
We're just into it.
Okay.
And it's about, you have to give nature about 8 years to work with in there. So we've still got at least another 5. And if we look at the peak, these things come every 89 years. The worst year for agriculture in Iowa, of course, that would be south east Iowa and sort of west Illinois, was 1847. 1847, 1936. 2025, if you want to keep the series going.
Are you nervous about 2025?
No, I'm not nervous, because I hope I'm wrong.
Should I be nervous?
Yeah.
What? What do I? We hear, and I'm going to get to this. I guess I'll just get to it now. I know people have asked you, I've been there when they've asked you, are we in climate change? What does that mean to you when you're asked that question?
Well, you always have to be a little bit interpreting who's asking and why, because some mean climate change that is being caused, at least in some aspect, by people, And a lot of times that's the concern now about climate change that we're responsible for. Or if you're just interested in our changing climate, the climate has always changed. It always will change. And yes, it does have some 89-year cycles. Like the year most like the Dust Bowl was in the 1800s, was around 1847, 1936, 2025. And don't get the idea just because a lot of people thought it was all their fault from bad farming practices. All we did by having better farming practices is if we get exactly the same weather, we won't have a series of dust storms because we've learned how to handle the soil better.
Well, there's plenty to be said about that. We're here at the Iowa Power Farm Show, and there's plenty of things in here that will help prevent you from... It'll let you till your soil up really well, but it also, there's a mentality that is different. We have learned some things.
We hope that it pays off as well. We know that if we do what we have learned and we have the exact same weather that we had back in 1936, don't get any idea that we will, but if we should, we should be able to handle it much better. And even though it could still be very wet years, very dry years, very extreme, we wouldn't have the extreme consequences that we had when we just weren't doing it right.
So when you say, depending on who's asking a question, because I would imagine that's something to do with intent or their motivation to ask a question about climate change. I've seen people say, for Twitter, on instance, to say it's very arrogant of us to think that we are responsible for impacting the weather. Is that a fair statement?
I think it is. We do have some responsibility to take care of our environment, but we're not quite to the point that we have complete blame for a bad year. Bad years will come and go, and the cycle is still there. And there would still be dust storms, even if there wasn't agriculture. But let's not be the cause of making them worse. And we've seen this in the last 30 years. There's a lot less black-colored snowdrifts now than there were 40 years ago in the Midwest, because we don't have so much soil moving around when we have an open winter as we did a few years ago. We've learned to stay off of the soil after harvest so it doesn't blow around if we have a windy, dry condition right at winter time. And that's been a lesson that we've obviously learned, because things are so much better now than they were 40, 45 years ago.
When you see a weather forecast, if you watch the local news, and I'm sure you look at different things than that, when you see a storm, a winter storm, or a spring round of storms are coming, that's not anything in your scientific work that can predict the day by day. You look at trends and things, but do you watch the local weather?
Well, of course I do, and I watch the day by day. And yes, for more than 6 years when I was with the National Weather Service, it was the day by day that counted. So I'm just as bad at that as any meteorologist.
Well, you know, how can they keep their job if they're wrong half of the time? Well, you try guessing scientifically what's going to happen.
Actually, we do pretty well in the U.S.
I think you do, too.
We're 83% plus accurate. And they say, well, that means that about once a week you really miss it. I said, that's absolutely right.
So you've had people come up to you, Elwin, and say, yeah, how could, you know, the finger pointing. So you can stick up for the likes of those chief meteorologists that get all those angry phone calls.
Well, when they point their fingers at the meteorologist or the climatologist, I'll join it and point the finger at me as well. But still, we're pretty pleased that we do have better than 80% accuracy. And that qualifies as legitimate forecast work. If you're not up to 80% accuracy, you just didn't make it. And believe it or not, the United States weather forecasts are one of the few places in the world that is more than 80% accurate.
You are now considered in emeritus status at Iowa State University. What does that mean to you?
It means nothing changed except they don't pay me anymore.
So coming to events like this is a chance to get paid.
Well, I don't charge to come to this event.
Sure.
Nevertheless, I do get just as many talks, and a lot of them pay a substantial amount as far as I'm concerned. I have a good retirement. I retired at a higher income than I worked. And people say, how did you choose the day to retire? Why did you wait till you were 78 years old to retire? I said, well, that's when my retirement got high enough that it exceeded what I was earning anyway.
So you played the numbers. You looked at the data and used that to make a decision.
What kind of climatologist would I be if I didn't look at the data?
Very well put. Exactly. The numbers, I look at a lot of your Mesonet and some of the things that have been on your websites, and I'm always fascinated at these locations, and we'll finish up with this because I know you have a talk here in a couple of minutes. What is the importance of these weather stations or these locations, observation spots in their various locations? What's the importance of gathering data like that?
The real importance is that those are called our climate stations. They've been there, most of them, for well over 100 years. Almost all of them, at least, were put in by 1889. And so in 1989, they hit their 100 years. And it's good to have 100 years of record of what the temperatures were on that farm, where the weather box, a little white birdhouse-looking box sitting out in the field or on the grass near a field, has said. And we really can say we've got measurements that went on what went on 100 years ago. We don't just have to search tree rings to see what happened to the plants or ask our neighbors and get their idea because, oh, things were really worse when I was a kid than when you're a kid.
Everybody thinks it was way worse or way better when they were a kid.
And they're absolutely right, but it's totally the way they feel about it.
That's
rather
right.
Than what the weather actually did.
Elwin Taylor, I appreciate the conversation. Thank you so very much.
I wish you the very best.
A 5-star review and telling a friend would mean a whole lot to us if you would share this episode of the M2M Podcast, which is a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. I'm Paul Yeager. Thank you so very much for listening.